Welcome to the Media Line. I'm Lawrence Rifkin. Joining me is Robert Kelly, a nuclear expert who worked for the International Atomic Energy Agency and twice served as a chief nuclear inspector in Iraq. He is now a research fellow for the Stockholm International Peace Research Institute. Iranian President Hassan Rouhani announced this morning that the Islamic Republic is currently enriching more uranium than it was before signing on to the JCPOA, the 2015 multilateral accord that was aimed at blocking its suspected drive to produce nuclear weapons. What does this mean technically? What do you, sitting in Vienna, see in your mind's eye?
From a technical point of view, it doesn't make much difference. The amount of uranium they're enriching and the uses they could put it to are still quite trivial, and this is not a major thing. They're simply trying to say that we're in the JCPOA, but we're not going to adhere to limits within the JCPOA until we see the U.S. begin to accept some of their responsibilities.
A few weeks ago, Rouhani made a similar statement. They were taking steps before that. And after the assassination of Soleimani, he basically said, it's not a question of steps anymore. We're simply not going to be adhering to the limits on enrichment. Clearly, that's political. But what does it mean with Iran, with Iran's capabilities, with Iran's willingness to move forward? Ditching the limitations means what? How far will they go?
Iran has been sending signals for years that they're really not interested in developing nuclear weapons. If you go back to the CIA's assessment of 2004 was the end of a program. And by the way, there really was a program before 2004. But after 2004, everything they've done has been to signal we're not really going to go down that path. So I think this is, they cooperated over a period of years to come up with the JCPOA. They went into it willingly. They accepted massive inspections. And now they find themselves in a position where nobody gave them anything in return. They actually increased the number of sanctions. So what I see is that this move was not in response to Soleimani necessarily. It was just part of a multi-step process where they kept saying each month that you don't give us something, we're going to up our production a little bit. The production itself is not serious. It's not quantitatively very serious, but it's kind of a way for them to say, you give us something in return that you promised.
You are listening to Robert Kelly, a nuclear expert who worked for the International Atomic Energy Agency and twice served as chief nuclear inspector in Iraq. He is now a research fellow for the Stockholm International Peace Research Institute. You're an expert, for example, during your days at Lawrence Livermore, you were an expert on centrifuges. The Iranians have spoken of advanced centrifuges. So there is clearly progress, not just on enrichment levels and stockpiles, but on tools and methodology. Do you think these are advances that came about while JCPOA was in full effect? After all, knowledge is harder to spot than a pile of enriched uranium.
They were making advances in centrifuges before JCPOA. You also have to remember for 2 years before JCPOA that they were adhering to limitations that were pretty similar to what came out in the JCPOA. So the JCPOA has gone on for at least 2 years longer than we like to think of it. That was 2015. In the case of were they developing more advanced centrifuges, absolutely yes. This is something that scientists and engineers always want to do. And given that they had something that was very primitive, supplied to them by Pakistan, and was completely obsolete, it would only make sense that they would try to build something better. That would be the kind of thing that scientists and engineers would always take on.
I think that's a very interesting point when you're talking about JCPOA and what was going on before, what was going on during. Speaking about that agreement, what is your view of the stipulations of the agreement? Was it a solid agreement? Was it enforceable?
It's very enforceable because they gave up a very large agreement with the IAEA. They're allowing the IAEA to come in and do inspections to monitor the enrichment process on a daily basis, to look at things like the destruction of the core of the Arak reactor, just unprecedented kinds of inspections. In Iraq, we could do a little bit more than they're doing in Iran, but not much. But the difference was Iraq was not agreeing voluntarily to these inspections. They lost a war, and therefore they were subject to the post-war agreements. Iran is doing much, much more than any country has ever done before on a voluntary basis.
What might you forecast from a technical point of view if JCPOA can't be salvaged or another accord cooked up in its place?
I think Iran is smart enough to recognize that nuclear weapons are not in their best interest, that they would be the very last thing that they should come to depend on. Nuclear weapons are increasingly seen as a weapon of the 20th century and something that has very little value in terms of asymmetric warfare, precision targeting with conventional munitions now. They're just really kind of obsolete, and hopefully the world is going to come to realize that nuclear weapons are obsolete. In this case, I think Iran has figured it out already, and they're in the process of saying, why should we waste treasure on this when we can do other things? Certainly conventional targeting with their missile systems could be very, very effective in a regional war. They don't threaten the United States directly right now. They threaten the neighbors, of course. But we look at a situation like North Korea, where they have nuclear weapons, means of delivering them, and we're not forcing them into any box whatsoever. They've come to believe the weapons are a necessary deterrent for their very survival. And there you have a case of a family that's running a family business instead of a country.
People talk about the word breakout. How much would it take for Iran to move from what you describe as its current status in terms of stockpile and enrichment to a position where it would be ready for a breakout mode?
I'm glad you brought up the term breakout, because breakout is being badly misused by people who don't understand arms control and the history of arms control. Breakout refers to when someone does something that you didn't expect and does it suddenly and surprises you. A good example would be when the Soviet Union broke out of the testing moratorium in 1961. It wasn't expected, nobody saw it coming, and it gave them a tremendous advantage for a short time. In the case of Iran, using the term breakout to apply to a slow, steady buildup of a stockpile is completely wrong. Okay, people are using the word, but let's understand that those people don't understand arms control. In the case of Iran, they are being watched day after day. Every gram they produce is being recorded by the IAEA, and at some point they'll reach, let's call it a threshold being more than important than this term breakout. And the threshold people like to toss around is enough uranium for one weapon. Does anybody really think that Iran, under IAEA inspections, would produce enough HEU, highly enriched uranium, which they're not doing now, for one weapon? I don't think so. You have to be a moron to believe that. It would be stopped. It would be nipped in the bud much before that time, and I think we know what country would probably jump in there most quickly to make that happen. So breakout is not the issue. It's a slow, steady, monitored, no surprises, buildup of a stockpile.
Robert Kelly, thank you for joining me at the Media Line. I'm Lawrence Rifkin.